This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to the season finale of Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John. And this is the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. Yeah,
oh, no.
You forgot to do it
this
time.
Oh, no!
Unreliable Kim.
It's because I wanted to say season finale.
That's okay. It is the season finale. This is the final film that we're discussing in our under our secret theme. We're going to totally give it away at the end of the episode. I think simply by saying that we are covering Robert Eggers' Nosferatu might already be all the answers you needed.
I've been wanting to talk about this theme for months now.
It's really tough not to say it out loud at the end of every episode when you're recording these shows.
And also to gauge how much to talk about elements of the theme and how much not to, because it comes up.
So yeah, sometimes you want to call attention to it. Sometimes you got to just tuck it away in a little drawer in the back of your brain.
Tuck it away.
Yeah. Anyway, the finale of the season and another classic Christmas story. This one overtly Christmas, I think. It came out on Christmas
last
year.
They mentioned Christmas twice in this movie.
Willem Dafoe lights a fucking pipe from a candle hanging in a classic German Christmas tree.
Okay, so they mentioned Christmas once, but Willem Dafoe does that. There's a Christmas tree.
There's a lot of Christmas trees. And
there's one Christmas tree.
There's one Christmas tree and the plague. The two things I always
the
think
gift
about.
The gift that keeps on giving.
a movie that we have talked about on the podcast before. We covered it for the Fiend Club. Of course, we were going to do a drive home from the drive-in review of this movie.
It's nice to revisit it a year later. I'm interested in your opinions.
Yeah, and I was going to say, in a movie that I think we still want to talk about. There's still...
I saw it in theaters six times.
I was on Letterboxd today, yeah, because I was
I reviewed it multiple times.
And I came across one of yours that just says, yeah, I saw this for a third time. That's it. That's the whole review.
Oh, there was that time that there was the fire alarm, and then you got to sneak in when the fire alarm ended and see the finale.
Yeah. It's just occasionally I would have to go to the mall and Kim would come with me. And
you'd get a 4-hour haircut and I'd just go see Nosferatu.
Fuck it, I'll see Nosferatu again. I brought this goddamn crypt popcorn bucket from home.
I hate the mall. I did bring my own crypt bucket from home. I already had it.
Yeah, and so a movie that obviously we like. We've seen it a bunch of times. We finally picked up a 4K copy of it because our movie theaters are just... All movie theaters across the land are too goddamn dark
John,
now.
John, I think it's just this movie.
And this movie's also dark, but there were some elements of this movie that I feel like I saw for the first time at home on our TV where I could turn the brightness up.
I did not see anything more.
We watched a couple scenes of this movie with the director's commentary on, and he's just talking about in this bow.
We can't get too into it. We got to talk about the theme.
At the end of the episode.
We're going to do it at the end?
Yeah, at the end.
We're going to make them wait till the end.
Of course.
Did we do that last time?
It's good producing.
Is it?
And it was stay to the end to hear the secret theme.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Anyway, yeah, this is a really dark movie. Super dark. Can't see anything. But by design. And I like it for it. I think it looks really good. I like how dark it is. And specifically, something I noticed this time around that I wanted to bounce off of you.
Mm-hmm.
The nighttime sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Looks awesome.
Yep.
Moonlight.
Love it.
Puts everything in grayscale. A lot of those scenes, I feel like we are seeing them with the shadow of Orlok in the room. Almost as though we are seeing those scenes through his eyes
in a way. Krampus' snow globe kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. A lot of those scenes are also Lily Rose Depp. What's her character's name? Ellen. Just sort of talking to him in the distance. So, I mean, we get the idea that he's there, but I couldn't help but...
He does have his fingers in the pie the whole movie, though.
Yeah,
he is not possessing Ellen, but they're definitely tethered together on some ethereal plane.
I will accept tethered. I don't know if I'll accept possessed. But yeah, some of those nighttime sequences just felt like we were in... Orlok vision, you know?
Orlok cam.
Even like the scene where we are.
Hey, Bill, I'm here down on German Road 4. And, you know, there's a lot of plague down here. We see a lot of rats, a lot of corpses.
Have you had a chance to talk to anybody about the pulse of what's going on down there? What do the locals think? What kind of dances are they doing?
Oh, well, Bill, there's a lot. Did I call you Bill earlier? Well, Bill, there's a lot of open sores here, so I will not be getting close to anyone. But there is a rat here that is quite loud, if you want to hear. Can you hear him?
Squeak, squeak.
Little Bill?
Was that supposed to be me?
What were we talking about?
You know, I was discussing Orlok vision, and
I want a shirt that says Orlok vision.
One of the scenes that really nailed it for me was when we are sort of moving into the friend's house, Aaron Taylor Johnson's place.
Use their character name.
What's his fucking
Friedrich?
Name? Friedrich. We're in Friedrich's place, and
I love how his wife says it. Friedrich.
Very bright. Very warm. Very welcoming, sure. But the moment everybody has gone to bed and Ellen is still awake, preparing for Thomas to leave, I don't know, we slipped into like a completely different color palette. And the
it's like the night belongs to Orlok.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. I think he is an oppressive force at night. And obviously they're doing a great job of foreshadowing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But even later throughout the movie, like I couldn't help but feel that we were seeing these scenes almost through his eyes.
That's cool. That's a fun interpretation. On its most basic level, though, I would say that in order to pay homage to the original Nosferatu, which is very early black and white, and it is very soupy, and it has very little medium tones. There's no gray in the original Nosferatu. It is like a bleached out black and white. It's very high contrast. This film had to be high contrast.
Are you also saying that like the carriage sequence where Thomas gets sort of lifted up into the into the carriage, that the bars on the sides of the TV making it a little bit more square are also an homage to old silent film? Or is that just an observation of mine? Because it also felt it also felt like Ty West did the same thing with X, where it looked like we were in an 8mm frame until we realized, like, oh, whoa, those are barn doors. This is, oh, shit, you know.
I didn't notice.
Okay.
That is my favorite scene of the movie, my favorite visual of the entire film. Did not notice. It's all about the carriage door opening on its own. It's just like the perfect amount of haunting and spooky.
Crossroads in the middle of a forest.
Oh, so spooky.
No
and then
driver.
He just floats in.
Yeah.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Then there's the reverse of it, too, where he is asleep in the carriage. He wakes up in the carriage, but then is suddenly standing in front of the doors. Great little tiny bit in the director's commentary. We watched a couple key scenes. To build that was essentially like everything you saw, like the walls of the carriage. Even Nick Holt's legs fake because he's standing at the time, right, in order for this to work. So we get in real close to his face. Everybody like pulls everything away and then bam, we realize that we're somewhere else completely. Like it's very disorienting. It's brilliant. It's good practical work. It's the kind of shit I like from silent films. It's impossible to say that it's not one of the best looking moments of the movie, and it's partly just because of how fucking spooky it is.
Yeah, it is the quintessential like gothic moment of the film. I mean, you could argue like the carriage pulling up to like Castle Dracula,
the gothic castle,
and there's all those like cool little laneways in the mountainside is pretty good too.
So what are some of your big takeaways this time around? Because we've seen this, you've seen this clearly, I think maybe 13 times now.
Yeah, so I really like the movie.
Yeah.
I love the visuals, I love the costuming, I love the set design. I'm just about period piece stuff.
I feel like you're working up to a
but. So here's the but. There were gripes kind of that I had when I saw it initially, and I was very interested to see how I felt about those gripes with time.
Yeah.
The first initial gripe, and this was a hot button topic on the internet,
ugh,
right about around when Nosferatu came out,
yeah,
was do we like the mustache or not?
The answer is yes. From day one, okay, we have liked the mustache.
So, but the answer has always been yes, but it was kind of like in an ironic way. Like, of course I want my Nosferatu with a mustache. He looks fabulous, and I just love a big mustache.
Uh-huh.
But the vampire fan in me has like these two distinctions between what a Nosferatu Dracula is and what a debonair Dracula is.
Mm.
And a Nosferatu Dracula is more like bat-like, or in the case of this film, very corpse-like. And a corpse would not have luscious mustachios like this Orlok does.
But if he died with it, it would only get bigger, because we all know the skin tightens when you're a corpse, and then your facial hair keeps growing, your nails grow. I mean, they don't really
grow. But that's just when your skin shrivels. Skeletons
don't
have
hair. This man's plump, is that what you're saying?
It's just a very full, luscious mustache, and I very much prefer a bat-like Nosferatu. Like,
okay.
My Nosferatu, you could literally draw wings behind him, and you're like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Bat wings, of course. Not angel wings. But I think I'm warming up to the mustache.
You're still not fully on board.
I love the mustache. I'm moving away from just loving it ironically into like appreciating the fact that they really went for this Romanian dude who was turned, or who just never died. Because he is very big in the costuming and stuff. So maybe he's really working hard to like retain the mustache from rotting away.
Okay, so one question I want to ask you, because I'm also a little undecided on this detail.
The mustache?
I'm fully on board with the mustache. Love the mustache, love the hair,
is it
love
the hat?
The hat.
Okay,
love
I was like,
the hat.
Is it the hat? I love the hat too.
Yeah, love. We watched.
It's cold there.
We watched the extended cut, by the way. The one thing I don't love is the laugh. In the extended cut, it's not much longer. It's just a couple key sequences.
Is that laugh new?
That laugh is new in the extended cut.
It is a little...
like an attempt at laughter.
It's a little silly.
Yeah, and then so they cut it. When Ellen calls out to him...
In the very beginning of the movie?
The very beginning of the movie. I'm still unsure whether he is a quote-unquote living entity at the time.
I'm picturing he is Lestat in Anne Rice's The Vampire Lestat, or whatever one that he hears the rock music and he wakes up and he's just like,
Queen of the Damned.
Yo, I was in this in-betweeny phase where I was like not dead, but I wasn't alive. Like I was in kind of like a comatose state. And then I heard rock music and I was like, yo, it's time to live again. and Ellen is his rock music.
Okay, good. That's kind of how I feel about it as well.
He like does a stretchy poo and he's like, let's try this again.
Yeah, like he is a living dead thing, but is mostly...
Living dead thing.
He is mostly just sort of hanging out in the tomb, doing nothing, right?
Hanging out in the tomb.
But see, even when I say it, I start to lose a little bit, because I wonder if he is brought to life again by her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's that he's like fully from death is alive for the first time in that moment.
I think the torture is that he can't. So that's why hearing her voice is so compelling, because like imagine you're in this in-between state, this like eternal darkness that you can never leave and never actually rest from.
Okay.
And you hear the voice of an angel.
Okay, so you're assuming that he has been walking the earth drinking blood for hundreds of years and has just gotten so bored and pained by not being able to die that rather than do anything, he just sits in his tomb.
I think he indifferences himself into a stasis.
Okay. I can buy this.
He's very apathetic. Like, this Nosferatu is not depressed. He's just apathetic.
Okay.
I am only an appetite.
Yeah.
I don't know why he was Italian, but you know.
As soon as you mention appetite. You
know. My Nosferatu has a ratatouille under the hat.
Okay. That's an incredible movie. Pixar, get on it. So I'm... Okay, I'm willing to... Not willing. I am on... I'm on board with this.
Okay, so check hat, check mustache, check ethereal plane. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
I like it. What else are you like on the fence about that is either like better this time or worse this time?
Okay.
I kind of just want to interview you this podcast because you have been the Nosferatu.
I've been really, really, really like dissecting this movie since the first time I saw it.
Yeah, for 12 months now.
Maybe it's hard to complain about because I do really like the film and I'll take
that mantle for you. What do you want to complain about? I'll pretend like it's my complaint.
I think I complained about this in the initial watch is that the decisions they made with the camera, they have a particular style that I think they overuse.
Okay.
And it is what I love about the crossroads scene with the carriage. Like they don't exactly do that, but it's like the film is built on different axes.
Yes.
And the camera can only live on whatever axis we've decided for this particular scene. So if we want to view another area of a room, like the camera will like pan to where it's going to be located in the room and then it won't move again. It'll just like rotate slowly. There's a lot of rotating without necessarily justifying it every time. And even when it is justified, like there is a really good scare later in the movie where Anna, the friend, hears a sound in the dark and she's in her hallway. And this is actually a great moment for your point earlier about how dark that house is at night. And it is pitch black. And so she hears a sound at the stairs and the camera turns and pans to the stairs. And then we pan back and then Ellen's there in the dark and it's woo scary. But by that time we've done it like 8 or 9 times and I just don't want to see it anymore. They use it to great effect in the scenes where Thomas is first meeting Orlok to show that weird disembodied feeling that he's having, like where he's transported into the carriage and then he's transported from the carriage to the gates. And then later when he's at the table having dinner, he cuts his finger and then all of a sudden he's sitting in front of the fireplace.
Uh-huh.
It's all wonderful and lovely there, but like we keep doing stuff where we go into the castle and we turn and pan to Thomas's room. Like we don't need to be doing it there.
Okay.
And I felt that way the first time I saw the movie, and I'm still feeling the same way about it.
And again,
it's weird though that it's like a thing I like, but I feel like it was just, I need it to be done less for me to really appreciate the scenes where I very much love it.
Yeah, you need a little bit of salt to bring out the flavor, and you're like, ooh, we crossed a bridge here. We have a little too much salt. It's still good, but, you know, a little salty. You know, like, again, we watched a couple key sequences with director's commentary. There's a few scenes where we learned that cuts were actually to break up a larger, longer take. One of the things I love about this movie, camera work-wise, performance-wise, is how many long takes there are.
There are a lot of long takes.
And it's not even just like, oh, wow, so impressive for these actors.
Especially because we
character.
Heard that he wasn't letting them blink.
Yeah, there's also that. Yeah, so Ellen, Lily Rose Depp was not allowed to blink a lot. She was allowed to blink, I can't say blink. She was allowed to blink some, but Bill Skarsgård was not allowed to blink at all, which kind of fucking sucked for
Makes
them.
Sense, though. Blinking is such a human need.
Yeah.
And also, like, what is he lubricating his eyes with?
Yeah, right?
Nothing.
It's always impressive to see actors stay in character and perform for long periods of time on camera. What I always find fascinating about it is the camera work there, because it's not just, oh, a Stanley Kubrick thing where we're like really far back, it's very static, one camera, one position, maybe it tilts a little bit. We literally have close-up shots, establishing shots, medium shots, wider shots, pull in on other things. Like there is
that's fair. That is a good point.
Very talented.
You're getting all of the perspectives in a long take,
yeah.
Which is very impressive.
Yeah. Steven Spielberg does it all the time. You can see it in all of his movies. It's one of the things I love about this. And I can see why it's driving you crazy here, but I think maybe that sort of that quality, that floating quality the camera has, maybe leans a little more into my Orlok vision theory that he is a presence in the room.
I was going to say, it is a very haunting ghost vibe. Yeah. Like it gives a bit of a personification to it.
Yeah.
Maybe the reason why I don't like it is because that is very, very different than how things were filmed in early black and white silent film. because the camera was very static.
It was on a tripod.
It was play. Like, you were just like, da-da-da-da-da, and then we cut to a black screen, and it'd be like, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
The sim version of a movie, yeah. Yeah, and cameras were so static that when, ooh, is it Carl Freund, the director who did The Mummy, who was the cinematographer for Dracula? When he finally figured out how to untether a camera and it's like had strapped to his chest.
Well, I'm sure camera was like 3,600 pounds when it was first. Maybe. I mean, I'm sure they're like that now, unless you're using an iPhone with 300 attachments. But
yeah, they probably still get pretty heavy.
They got some pretty good strap situations now.
Mm-hmm. I also don't love all of the camera work in the movie, but like, who gives a fuck? I don't have to love absolutely everything. It is a strange movie because I really enjoy it. I love watching it. And then when I'm faced with like putting a rating on Letterboxd, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's not perfect. Like,
you're like 4.9 out of 5.
It really casts a spell on me while I'm watching it.
It's so successful in what it's doing. Like, and what a difficult task to introduce a story that everyone knows and loves, Dracula.
Yeah.
That was then ripped off and simplified, and then you're remaking that into a film in modern times where you have to have like 2 hours worth of language.
Yeah. It must be what retconning and universe building feels like in some of the Marvel stuff, because we have this like fracture in the timeline way back in the day. Now we've got two conflicting timelines that are going beyond it, and we've got a lot of years and a lot of input from a lot of different people on what each of these things is.
Yeah, because there's things that belong to like the Nosferatu version, and there are things that belong to the Dracula version, and I'm sure there was a struggle between how much are we going to do that, that's in Dracula, and how much we're going to do that's just Nosferatu. And you don't want to just do Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
But they are very much the same story. It's weird, because it's not just like, okay, well, this one's a bat, and this one's a cool dude.
This one's a shadow, yeah. The other interesting thing about the movie, the other weird thing to get over is that, oh, what is the nicest way to say it? Ellen really gets on my nerves every once in a while throughout the movie. Like, she just doesn't have anything but morose teenage girl dialogue. And, like, I kind of love her for it. But there's just, like, no other note that she hits. Like, it is always just, like,
she's too Wednesday Addams.
Yeah,
like,
she's that 17-year-old kid who's just like, don't you all realize we're all gonna die one day? How can you just sit there and eat brunch with a smile on your face? You know, like, that thought that you have.
You're like, don't you look at the lake and think about death?
Yeah, constantly. Yeah, there's a lot of that from her. There's a lot of period trappings that if you don't like this kind of movie, I can see every moment where you are rolling your fucking eyes. And like, sometimes I want to a little bit as well. But I really do like these movies. I think they did an exceptional job.
These movies?
Yeah, like period piece movies. This movie in particular, I think, is an exceptional. Like, Robert Eggers is just doing some incredible work.
I hope we never get him in the modern day. Never, ever.
Him and, I really sad that I don't remember her name, but the woman who made The Love Witch, if the two of them ever got together and made a movie, it would take 15 years to make.
I don't want to see Robert Eggers in the 70s.
I mean,
he can get to the 40s,
soon.
And that's as far as I'll let him go.
But it's just, there's so much research and so much detail and so much period accuracy. And it feels so lived in a natural way. It doesn't feel overworked and overcooked. And that's a fine line to walk. I think he does an incredible job.
Yeah, between like being insufferable and then being artistic.
Yeah.
No, I think that's great. But you just know that every scene is taking something from the lore. Like the scene when Thomas wakes up in the night and he's stayed at the inn and he follows outside and they're doing like a procession. There's a naked virgin on a horse and there's no explanation for it, but you just know that this was a custom. And everybody after the movie definitely like Googled, were like, what the fuck is with the virgin on the horse? I'm like, well, back in Romania, they used to find vampires by putting a virgin on a horse and making her walk through the graveyard. And if she couldn't cross the grave, that'd be a vampire.
It's a metal as fuck divining rod. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like just knowing Robert Eggers, seeing that scene, you're like, this is some accurate stuff.
This took 13 months of going back and forth to the library to find this for sure. He's the only filmmaker that's using a library instead of the internet now. That's my belief, and I'll stand by it. That end sequence is still one of my favorites. Do you like it anymore? Because I thought that drove you fucking nuts.
Yeah, that was another one of my not so loves. I love the outside stuff. I love everybody dancing and doing their fun stuff. Yeah, All of those people need a Nosferatu spinoff. I don't care what they're doing. I want to see that vampire hunter, and I want him to do stuff.
Coming to Prime Video this summer.
I fucking love him. And all we do is see him laugh and give a knowing look. Those are his two moments. Yeah. And he stole the fucking show.
Well, he also kills a vampire later on. Like, he's clearly a vampire
hunter. Yeah, but it's
the
smile he does. And then the knowing glance after he kills the vampire and sees Thomas, and he's like, you're not made for this.
Yeah, like Kragan, vampire hunter.
With a cool hat.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Yeah, but the inn is so fucking smoky.
Love it.
So smoky.
Big fan.
So smoky.
Yeah, pretty great.
It does give it a very cool vibe, and it's got a lot of atmosphere. It feels very period appropriate, but I can't see shit.
I don't even give a shit. I think it looks awesome. I'm like, I'd stay here. Absolutely.
I worry about people's lungs in that scene.
Oh, you think that's bad? I mean, everybody's lungs suck. This is a horrible time to live.
I just meant the actors.
Oh, okay. I take it back. So one of the things that I had been thinking of watching the movie, which I feel like helped explain Ellen a little bit to me, and was like, I guess it was more of a thought experiment. I don't think this was necessarily a discovery, but I just kept watching every scene she was in and every reaction she had to anything with the understanding that she is haunted by the image of the end of the movie, like haunted by the image of her death. And I don't think she fully
I agree with you. I don't know if it's conveyed as often as I think it should be for that to land.
Yes.
Because she tells Thomas about her dream in the beginning of the film, and it's essentially she's narrating kind of the end of the film.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not forget too that she freaks out at him in that moment before telling him that story, or retelling him that story, because he has come home with lilacs. And she is, why would you kill these? Like, she looks at these flowers and all she can see is death.
And then the next scene, she's wearing a lilac dress.
She's wearing a lilac dress. She's surrounded by it. She also has lilac.
She's the lilac.
She's the lilac. And, like, it gets put all over her dead corpse at the end of the movie. Like, of course she's going to hate him, but also respect them and understand them.
Yeah, I think what makes, because I have the same issues you do with her character. I'm not sure if it's because I just don't love Lily Rose Depp.
Okay.
But I'm not even going to unpack that because I don't know.
Shout out Yoga Hosers.
But what makes her character a little bit easier for me to understand is I think of her as a medium in time where there were no mediums.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she's like shaking the table and people are like, what the fuck is wrong with her? Give her more ether.
Yeah. She
like
definitely
she's
has
just
epilepsy,
a conduit that doesn't know how to turn off. Like she's just, and that's why she's like vibrating. She's just getting too much fucking electricity.
Mm.
And she's got this dude that's constantly like, love me. I'm coming for you.
And also this vampire.
Why did you get married? Yeah. What are you doing? Why did you wait so long? They were obviously together when she was like 14. Why didn't, I guess because somebody else had her, and then he's like, I'm crossing oceans of time for you now.
Are you trying to say that you think he was physically at her estate as a vampire?
No, I don't think he physically needs to be anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know why he waited so long though, but you're right.
Why was there that break? What was that about? Yeah, like they broke up.
Oh, they took a break. Yeah. You're saying, okay, yeah.
Did they only break up because she met Thomas? And then maybe she just like turned off her gift and he was like, where'd she go? She hung up.
I mean, she hung up like she cut the string on our two tin cans.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
I mean, you're probably right. Like, I think that the connection is severed a little bit. And she says this, too, about how she met Thomas and she had an optimistic view for once. Like, she felt love. And so he really became like this bright light that was next to her. And she couldn't see any of the darkness surrounding
them. Like, she's a moth.
Yes. And it's only once he went away that it got worse. Like the darkness was able to invade again, right? It's hard to say because it's they are two sides of the same coin. They are the destruction of each other, and none of it happens without all the people around them.
They are all like pieces on a chessboard that are slowly working toward each other. I don't think anybody necessarily, like any individual person, knows their role in the whole scenario, but they all are sort of slowly working toward this goal that is like a mirage in the distance. Like they're
except
not...
the friends. They're just emotional loss.
Well, they are trying to help Ellen, and they're trying to...
Yeah, but they're not integral in the chessboard.
They are. I think they are integral in the chessboard. I think everybody has their own little role to play, because like things have to happen in a specific way in order to get Ellen alone.
Yeah, like they have to knock... He has to knock them off on night two, so she's like, fine, I'll marry you on night three.
Okay. So you're saying it would be just as good as if he showed up and killed everybody and then waited for her to get sad? Is that what you're saying?
Well, kind of. She says no to him, and he's like, okay, well, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you 3 days because you said no on today, the first day. Today is officially the first day, but tomorrow you're going to have to say no again, maybe, but maybe you won't. And then day night three, you have to say yes because I'm going to kill your boyfriend.
I'm going to kill everybody. Yeah, that's...
Which he could just do because she said no, but he really wants to date her.
He really wants to date her. Yeah, there is a weird aspect there where she has to give herself willingly. She has to want it and
yeah,
all.
Yeah, he seems like such a non-rule person. It's weird. I mean, he is very particular about his title being used and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
But just to, I don't know, for him to have to, like, fall by fairy tale rules is kind of interesting. Especially because they just come up randomly.
The fairy tale of it all is great. I like it. And I think it's...
You must annul your marriage or I shan't marry you. To be married in the non-flick church.
I like the fairy tale quality of it, though.
I do, too. At least in the finale.
Yeah. Okay, so the finale's kind of crazy. There is... I was talking earlier about how, like, she is sort of haunted by this image. Or at the very least, there is just this image in her mind of her death that she can't get out. I don't think she necessarily knows at the moment that it's her death. But I think she is always trying to work toward...
She knows it's death.
I don't know, though, because...
She marries him in her dream.
Yeah, but I think that is... I don't think she is making the connection between this... It's imagine having a song stuck in your head and you can't figure out what it is, but it never goes away. You know, like an earworm that try as you might, you never hear it ever. Like she lives in the fucking 1800s. She'd never be able to like, let me just flip through these crates.
Oh, Beethoven.
Yeah, see if I can find this track.
Why is your sonata got to be 30 minutes long?
But just imagine that. Like imagine that you can never get that out of your fucking head. And like part of it is alluring, but also you know that there is a dread quality to it. So like you kind of don't, it's like picking at a scab, you know, it's not something you should be doing, but something that you can't help but do.
Yeah, it's like there's a prophecy, but she's only getting crumbs of it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of what she does throughout the movie is try and fulfill that prophecy, and like whether she knows it or not.
So she's trying not to fulfill that prophecy, but she doesn't know what it is.
Well, there is an interesting thing about...
Maybe consciously she's not, but subconsciously she is.
So in the beginning of the movie, Ellen is trying to keep Thomas with her. Like, stay here with me. Stay here with me in this bed. It's the morning. The sun is rising. The world is waking up and life is starting again. And she is trying to stop him from going to work. Like, it's like we brush it off as this cute newlywed thing. Like,
but
they just can't keep their hands off.
But she has
other
vibes. Like, she knows he's going to go away, even though it hasn't been announced yet. She says something to little like, you've already got the job. You're going to be leaving.
Yeah.
Before anybody knows.
Yes. Very Shining style.
I think she knows that him leaving is going to set off in motion, basically, the movie. She doesn't know what it's going to set off, but it's setting off something in motion.
But what's fascinating is that all of the stuff she tries to get him to do, she tries to get him to stay, she tries to get people to listen to her, she tries to get people to understand what's happening and to just do what she's asking. And the only person she's able to do that with is Orlok at the end of the movie. You know?
Yeah.
Because they're in the bed. He's like, he will literally die if he doesn't get up and leave. And she's like, no, stay with me just a little while longer. And he's like, hell yeah. You know, like, there is a pull that she has, but only with him.
That's good.
And she's trying to do it with Thomas.
I love seeing that as like just visually the attempt of trying to like keep him in the bed is just her kind of doing the motion of like what is fated for her. Like she knows she has to keep Orlok in the bed.
Right.
She just doesn't, like, her body knows it, but like her brain doesn't know it yet. That's really, really fucking poetic. Yeah. Good job, John.
That's, well, I didn't make the movie, but.
Yeah, but you analyzed it.
I saw that. and it's like she's a ghost. The way that you see a classic Elizabethan ghost or something. It's just wakes up at a specific time and like goes about and does their tasks.
Well,
and
I mean,
fades
that was
off into
that
distance.
Was women's roles back then. They didn't get to do a lot.
Yeah, I feel like she is a living ghost. The way that Orlok is a living corpse.
Mm.
And she is just not like
because
going.
Because she's morbid?
Because she's cool as fuck. Yeah, she's so goth in this movie. But yeah, there's a lot of that in the movie, and I think it is one of Egger's biggest strengths in the film. You know, like, we have to give him credit for making his weirdest movie, but also his most commercial movie.
That is very true.
Like, this is his big studio film, and it's arguably one of the strangest movies he's made. It's definitely not as strange as The Lighthouse, let's be fucking real. but it is super weird, and to ask normal people to come out on Christmas and see a monster with a dick drinking blood and a crazy guy played by Willem Dafoe with lots of cats drinking schnapps everywhere. Like,
one of the biggest surprises for me after seeing it was just realizing how many people were not aware of Nosferatu, like the legend. Like, I think they knew it was a vampire story, but they're like, oh, this is just Dracula. And it's like, oh boy, do I have a story for you.
They're like, there's a lot of necrophilia in this Dracula
story.
Like,
Nosferatu is to Dracula as to Jason Voorhees is to Michael Myers.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's a can of worms. I think it's one of his strongest movies for sure, and especially just like in the visual storytelling of it. Like, there is so much good foreshadowing and visual imagery that you see throughout the film that is either repeated or completely foreshadowing what's going to happen later on.
What do the rats mean?
What do the rats mean?
Do you think he is the rats?
Ah, like in what way? Like in the way that...
Okay, so if there was a Nosferatu Barbie, would it come with rats, or would you have to get Nosferatu rats Barbie? Like, where it's just a pile of rats in the shape of a dude.
I don't know if I know how to answer this question. Like, how many accessories did Barbie normally come with? None?
Well, when I was a kid, she came with a few.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, like a phone and a puppy or something. She was wearing the shoes she had. So, like, Dracula, I think Dracula can be rats, but I think Dracula has to, like, poof into rats. Because he can, like, poof into mist, and he can poof into wolves that climb the castle.
Yes.
Nosferatu has wolves, but is he the wolves?
That's a great question. So, I don't think he is the rats. I don't think he can become them. I do think they are...
But they do definitely come, like, as accoutrement. They do come with him.
So I think he is like a storm, and these are the things that get pulled
like,
with him.
They're like the cow in the tornado.
Don't besmirch.
What are you trying to say here?
Do not try and insult Twister.
Okay, so they're the witch riding the bicycle in the storm.
Some of this is starting to make sense. Yeah, like, I think he is the eye of the storm, and I think the rats and everything else are what gets swept up with him as he travels.
Do you think that, you think they're real rats? Like these rats just get pulled on a course because, like, Nosferatu is in town?
You are asking questions that I thought we already had answers to. Oh. You don't think they're real rats?
No.
Okay.
I don't think they're real wolves. I think... Especially with the wolves. So that's another like big image is like the Grimm, which is like a dark dog that you see and it's an omen of death.
Yeah.
I think they might be omens or like representations. So like they're literal embodiments of things that are maybe like kind of like a ghost. Like,
so these are other smaller, lower entities that are hanging out being like, let this guy cook.
No,
like,
I don't think they're anything. I think they're apparitions, like a holograph or something. The rats represent plague. The plague is descending upon the city. And
he
visually,
is the plague.
Because film is a visual medium.
Sure.
And Dracula's metal as fuck.
Yeah.
Rats.
Rats.
You think the wolves, like, find Dracula? Or find Nosferatu?
I mean, I think the wolves are just like, yo, this guy's kind of cool. Why don't we just hook up with this guy? He's got his castle he's not really using.
So he would have to, like, name them then, if they're real things.
I don't know. Like, do the whales name the fish that, like, eat all the, like...
Krill? Leave?
Yeah. No, not the krill. Like, you know, like, the whales are so fucking big that they have an ecosystem around them.
What is happening? Okay. I think they're omens. You think they're cows and tornadoes.
No!
Both of them come as accessories to their respective action figure.
Yeah, I guess, like, to absolutely simplify it and not to get, try and get too crazy and, like, draw comparisons and shit. Like, I think he is his own thing, and I think other stuff gets swept up with him. I guess the real question to simplify this would be...
So what I would like to do to describe it is I think, you know, like, in Cloverfield, when they're in the subway and those things fall off the clover... And they eat.
This is a harder question to answer. Are they part of Clover, or are they their own thing? Do they report back? Do they have their own desires?
Is it a hive mind?
Yeah, we don't know.
The rats definitely talk to each other.
We nuked them before we could find out. I can simplify this if we take the rats out of the equation. Does the plague arrive to town if the rats aren't there? Like, is he the plague?
Yeah, he's the plague.
Okay, so the rats are just hanging out.
The rats are a visual embodiment of the plague.
This has to be what it's like talking to me about Twin Peaks. This has to be what it feels like. Yeah, I don't know. That is a really good question. I like that idea. I don't have a solid answer for you, but I also don't really have, like, a solid answer for a lot of some of the
stuff.
Yeah,
I don't
think
it matters. I think it's just fun to discuss.
I think it just rhymes, you know, like, visually, metaphysically, whatever. Like, it has a poetry to it, whether it works fully or not. Like, whether it's fully explained is what I mean to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it all fits. And I do like the fairy tale quality of it, especially the...
Actually, I do have a complication for this theory.
Oh, fuck.
Because he is definitely shadows. Because he can unlock doors and stuff.
Yeah, those shadows can unlock the shadow work in this fucking
so
movie.
Good.
Like, it's a Nosferatu movie. There better be good shadow work.
So good.
But Jesus
Christ.
Oh,
when the shadow comes out because he's, like, locked in the room after he shows Thomas's dong, and he turns him around.
Insane, right?
So good.
And, like, it's the image that you know from the original Nosferatu. And, like, we get one of those as well, where, like, the claw comes up over her heart and sort of, like, grabs at it.
The scary fingers reaching.
It's so goddamn good. And yeah, like, what we do with it. What I love about the fucking shadow and the hands is that it always comes from impossible angles. The scene you're talking about where he gets Nicholas Holt to turn around, where he gets
the
Thomas
shadow
to...
is coming from outside of...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's impossible.
Coming from the opposite angles. Yeah. Nosferatu is everywhere. You cannot escape him. You are under his shadow. It's just like the old lady said in the inn. You gotta just spit on the floor and pray. There's no other way to get out of this.
Well, they do say that he's... Because when Thomas escapes the castle, falls in a river, he's, like, picked up by some nuns, and they're like, yo, we gotta pray for you.
Yeah.
The young one that can speak English says, you're in his shadow. You're in darkness. Which is kind of, by the end of the movie, everybody in town is
absolutely
in his shadow.
Yeah.
And literally, his hand crawls across the city, which is my favorite shot, even back from the trailer. I was just like, holy shit, this is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great.
Yeah, it totally exceeded Oh, man, it's tough. Like, they had a lot going against them because of what they were making. And you're right. I think kind of like with our discussion with the Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein, you end up doing a lot of comparison to what it isn't, you know? Like it's like, oh, it is a great movie, but the original Nosferatu does this. And, like, I think maybe some of the changes here are good for their own little story, but, like, maybe don't quite mesh with what I expect of a Nosferatu movie, the same way Frankenstein kind of does the same thing. Like, you wind up getting lost in talking about all the things that it isn't compared to its source material.
Yeah, and I think the discussion, too, with, like, if we're talking about Frankenstein, also is the medium, and that it was intended to be a Netflix film. So Netflix has its own kind of, like, rules and ecosystem of how its content is, like, visually displayed, because people are distracted by their phones and they're in their own house, and how much analysis they've done on viewership. I worry that a lot of the stuff that we were, like, humming and hawing about Frankenstein are because it was intended to be a streaming movie.
That makes me sad.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, it's up to Robert Eggers to keep cinemas alive. I guess Christopher Nolan, if you like Christopher Nolan's movies. But, I mean, hey, we got
Nosferatu last year.
I love that you didn't mention the avatars or whatever.
We got Frankenstein this year. I'm told there's a new Avatar movie as well. Anaconda, if you count that as a monster movie. And next year, we've got Robert Eggers' Werewolf, if it doesn't get pushed.
Do you think it'll be Christmas? Is it supposed to be Christmas?
It's coming out December 2026.
Oh, I love a werewolf in the snow.
Yeah.
He better be in the snow.
We got Willem Dafoe. If you base it solely on the hair and beard of Aaron Taylor Johnson right now, almost guaranteed we're getting snow. He looks like a wild man.
Is he playing the werewolf?
Maybe. I don't know. I know he's in it.
Oh, Lily Rose Depp's in it, too. Probably the same fucking cast.
It's gonna be great. Same cinematographer. It's gonna be the same movie, but with the werewolf. And I'm fine with it.
I'm stoked. I hope he does period movies forever.
I mean, he probably will. I think he has said that he doesn't really like doing things that aren't period movies.
Good.
And part of it's also he's like, I fucking hate phones. he's gonna do everything he can not to make a movie with a phone in it.
I think that was the quote.
Before we go,
costume designers probably love him.
Yeah, I bet they're keeping. He's keeping them
employed. And Guillermo del Toro, to be real.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like the two people that are just like dresses. We need more dresses.
What a good
bus off.
Good year for period piece monster movies. Holy shit.
2 years, but sure.
Whatever.
I mean, if you're counting December 24th to December 24th, fine too.
25th, yeah. Before we go, I would love to hear if you could do a Orlok impression.
No.
You got to.
Okay. Give me a line. You have to do one after two.
Of course.
Oh, God. Didn't I already do one and he was Italian?
I don't know. That might have got cut.
Oh.
So heads up,
guys. I hope my Ratatouille wasn't cut.
I think it might have been cut.
Oh, I really
don't know.
That was good stuff.
That was incredible. Guys, we had a whole half hour chunk of this podcast that got scrubbed because my computer wasn't plugged in. And I think when I plugged it in, it stopped the recording. And we didn't know and just kept spitting gold out into these microphones for you. But you'll never hear it. And I'm incredibly sad about it. Okay, here's a handful of Count Orlok quotes. You go ahead and pick one. Do it in your best voice, and then I'll follow it up with my own shit version. And we haven't talked a lot about it, you know, while Kim mentally prepares for this. But yeah, Bill Skarsgård, just an incredible fucking job. When we put the movie on the other night, I kind of forgot he was in it. Like, I knew he was in it.
I find myself the entire time through the movie trying to find Bill Skarsgård in Orlok, and I can't.
Yeah.
The voice work that he did, apparently he trained with like an opera coach or something.
Yeah.
He did a really great job.
Yeah.
And I remember back when like it was coming out and I was like, what are they doing with this baby in this role? and they're like, oh, these are his real eyes and da 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 da. And I was like, okay, Bill, I see you. But like now I'm really, all right, fine. Like you can have them all. You can be every monster if you want. I'll let you. Yeah. I don't care anymore.
You want to be Frankenstein?
I trust you. You were so corpsey in this. I buy it. Okay, I'm just stalling. Can you go first?
Sure, but I might end up choosing the quote you want to do.
Okay, it is not me. It is in your own nature.
Oh, you get. That is the one thing I was going to steal if you didn't do it. I was going to roll that R so hard. Oh, man. Good work. Good work.
He talks so fucking slow, though.
Like, you awakened me from an eternity of darkness. That's about all I got.
Yeah, and he talks so slow because he's like fucking a mountain trying to move.
Yeah. God, great movie.
Oh, we didn't talk about his breathing. His breathing is so good.
It hurts to listen to.
It's uncomfortable because it's like, oh, those lungs got fluid in them.
Yeah, like you can hear that he's got 1,000 holes in his body and they are all whistling. Like the way an old castle does when the wind rolls through it. Like,
and he... Oh, God.
That hurt to do.
John died. Yeah, he breathes so loud in that...
Keep going without me, I'm fine.
I'm just going to keep going. Yeah. He breathes so loud in that castle, it's like the candles are going to suck towards him. Like, he sucks all the air out of the room.
It's pretty fucking cool.
Dear, take some of my coffee.
I'm all right. Don't give me coffee.
Well, it's just a sip.
I'll die. I'm good.
It's because of that Nosferatu voice you just did.
Yeah, I did it for 5 seconds. I did a shit job and I'm dead. Way to go, Bill.
Oh, boy. Yeah, having to do that voice and never blink, it's a tough job.
That's a lot. Any final thoughts on Nosferatu before we go out, Kim?
Yeah, I just want to say that I love a Christmas movie, and I love that that there were just like a lot of rats in this.
Okay.
And just like rats.
Merry Christmas, rats.
I love Nosferatu, Dracula. I like when, you know, sometimes Dracula's bald and has pointy ears.
The end?
Yep.
Okay. So we have been running a secret. Thank you very much for that, Kim. It's always a pleasure having our on-the-field correspondent with the Rat Report. Before we go today,
I want a real segment called the Rat Report.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, we need a rat report, and we need a wet ghost alert is what we need.
Oh, my God.
Everybody, we've got a wet ghost in the movie theater this month, you know. Anyway, we have been running a secret theme on the podcast all season long. Every movie that we have talked about has had some connective tissue. And I was really excited for this season when we came up with the idea.
Honestly, he mainly used it so he could sneak movies like Terminator
you're
and stuff.
You're fucking
in-
right, I did. That's your. If you want to know, if there is a overarching story and world of this podcast, I am the villain in it. I am the fucking one pulling the strings, making the bad decisions that people don't like. But you better believe that this season gave me the one opportunity I would ever have to get the Terminator on the podcast. Even if I continually refer to it as an indie movie when I meant low budget, it's clearly not an indie movie, but whatever. Not my worst sin, I guess. this was really fun. And we gave everybody two chances to submit their guesses throughout the season. So if you submitted one early and you wanted to just like throw a shot across the bow and like take a wild gamble, you had the opportunity to have a more like educated guess later in the season. And when you read through the responses, you can really see how we were throwing people off in some of those early movies. Because of movies like Slaughter High, which kicked off the season, and Pieces, which we followed up with.
Well, it did start in September, so we were doing kind of a back to school vibe.
But just as a misdirect, which maybe we shouldn't reveal all of our moves on the podcast. We're just making it easier for people to guess the theme in the future. But, we got a lot of like set in school, revenge stuff. We got a really fun one. One of my favorite responses, let me see if I can find the exact wording, was female abdomen kill in shower.
Abdomen kill.
Abdomen kill.
That's very specific.
Incredibly specific.
We're going to have to go back at least to the first few movies and see if that holds up. Like, right? I know Pieces has a definite
Absolutely. Abdomen
kill in a shower.
But I'm okay. I mean, the Slaughter High, we have a bathtub and there's acid that gets.
Is it abdomen heavy, though?
Maybe it's just that there's a close-up shot on an abdomen during a kill. A girl gets killed in a shower and possess her. This is hard and holding up. Have we fucked up? Like, is the secret
the
theme actually abdomen kill in shower? It might almost be. But then, yeah, we started to get into more like cerebral stuff, like possessor. Like, you could argue, basket case. And Kim, I gotta say, maybe the highlight of the season, your theory, or at least reading of basket case as...
it's puberty.
I can't get past that. It's so fucking good. But yeah, like throughout the rest of the season, we had movies like Creep 2, unreliable narrators were a lot of the guesses that we were getting, but we did eventually, and I think it was actually for the Halloween episode, get a correct prediction, and I think some of the rest of the episodes that we put out in November really helped sell it for people. It's also why we left Nosferatu for the very end. Kim, would you like to tell them what the secret theme is?
So the official secret theme of this season has been Dogs of the Dead.
Yeah, that's right. Every single movie that we talked about this season had a dong in it. Kudos to a lot of people for actually using the word dong.
We had some actual dong answers.
Yeah, and like I was fully prepared to just really hand out a lot of extra prizes if anybody got the actual name right.
We had a really good guess. So the person who got it first, Hannah, congratulations, Hannah. You're going to get an email with information on how to get your prize. You win a Cocktails from the Crypt book and a Nightmare on Film Street prize pack. And you, Hannah's guess was Halloweenies.
Yeah, and then in brackets, all movies hang dong is what she said. Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah, and then we started as, you know, like movies like Terminator, The Stepfather, Eastern Promises especially.
Terminator like barely fits the criteria.
So
though.
Here's, but this is what's genius about, not, okay, genius is not the right word. I'm gonna step that back a little bit.
I'm gonna dial it back a bit.
What's really fun about Terminator being on this particular secret theme, if you saw this movie in the theater in the 80s, which I did not, I was not alive, but if you did, you would not have seen Arnold's wiener. You know, like, that is just...
Oh, so they were like, don't worry, Arnold. Nobody's going to know you're actually naked for this shot, but we need you to be naked for this shot.
Yeah, because the character's naked, so you're naked, it's
and
fine.
And then 30 years later, he's like, I'm not getting residuals anymore.
Yeah, because like the way that they lit the scene, the film stock that they were using, the way the movie's projected. Like,
do you think somebody had to restore his dong like pixel by pixel for the 4K?
Do you think, okay, so let me rephrase that question. Is it that I thought somebody had to, or somebody had the pleasure of doing that? Somebody worked pro bono to do that. So yeah, that's the thing. No one saw that wiener until we got like the Blu-ray upscale. Like until this movie was in 4K, we finally got to see Arnold's dong in the movie, which is actually kind of a mistake, but a funny one.
That's funny. That's great.
The rest of the movies in the season have had very explicit
Well, I
wieners.
Will also say Stepfather is also barely any dong, but there is a little dong, a little bit of dong, not to insult.
Sorry, Mr. Terry O'Quinn.
There is a little bit of dong in The Stepfather.
Yeah, there's a little bit of dong in all of us.
There's a little bit of dong in all of us.
But yeah, congratulations, Hannah. You were the first person to guess it correctly. You're winning the official prize pack. Also, if you have a copy of the book, just let us know. Like,
we'll just give you more t-shirts.
Yeah, you'll just get a couple t-shirts from the store. It'll be great. You can pick out what you want. We have a couple other people who did correctly guess it. So take a look at your emails if you guessed dongs, if you guessed anything. There is somebody here who just said, you know, male genitalia or male nudity. That counts. That totally counts.
We're not just accepting dongs.
Yeah, we're going to pick two other runner-up winners. You're going to win yourself a Nightmare on Film Street t-shirt. So take a look at your emails, check your junk folders.
Yeah, we're going to randomly draw two people out of all the correct answers.
Exactly. This has been a lot of fun.
I'm so happy we finally got to talk about the theme because I think it's been one of our best titles. Dongs of the Dead.
That's the problem.
And it's been a secret for like months.
You can't say Dong of the Dead.
And I was also like, how much can I talk about dongs this season?
Yeah.
Because like I don't want to draw attention to the dongs, but also like we would draw attention to the dongs.
We really had to pick and choose when we would talk about it.
So I had to try to be like natural with like, okay, like how would I report on this dong? Mm-hmm. That's why we had to do Nosferatu last.
Yeah.
Because like the dong is like such an important part of this movie.
It's why Eastern Promise, well, it's one of the reasons Eastern Promise is a second last one. It's not a movie that you would talk about around Halloween time. It's like kind of a Christmas movie, and also the one thing everybody talks about is that naked fight scene with Viggo Mortensen.
Have you ever seen a dong raise the stakes as much as the dong in Eastern Promises?
Yeah, it has been very hard not to discuss the theme because it's just so silly is the other thing. And yeah, when you have a fun title, because we don't do the fun titles for the podcast anymore
now that we're worried about SEO.
Yeah, well that and you know, it's just how many fun titles can you come up with before you accidentally give away that the theme is about dongs, right? But yeah, this was great. I really enjoyed doing the pop star theme earlier this year for the previous season. Dongs of the Dead was so much fun.
It was fun. And we really got to like really play in the genre space. This has been the weirdest, the most eclectic season we've ever done.
Yeah. You should see some of the runner-up movies, but like other movies that we were considering. We almost talked about The Greasy Strangler, which has the weirdest dong ever. I think that would have also given it away because that would have been 35 minutes about that dick in that movie. That movie is so fucking
weird. I thought I talked about
weird.
Dicks too much in Basket Case.
Maybe. But I mean, that was one of the best parts of the season, frankly. Like, just like, because your theory played into it. There's only a little bit of wiener in that movie, and it's in a dream sequence. It practically doesn't exist. But yeah, we were already hard at work at starting the next season, which will be coming out in 2026.
Spring 2026.
Spring 2026.
Summer 2026?
Probably not that late. We
Springer.
Keep an eye on the feed. We'll keep you posted. We're gonna be coming out with a couple of year-end episodes highlighting our favorite movies of the year, you know, new releases, and also, you know, some festival finds and discoveries that we, you know, saw for the first time this year. That's going to be in the feed here. Some of that's going to be over in the Fiend Club. We want to thank you so much for joining us this season on the podcast. We had a blast. We hope you enjoyed listening to these episodes as well.
If you want even more Nightmare on Film Street while we are on hiatus, while we're gone, make sure you check out The Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub or patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. We're going to be releasing our Drive Home from the Drive-Ins and our What's Keeping Us Creepies throughout the off-season, so there will be content going through there all the time. But if you enjoyed this season, if you enjoyed the Dongs of the Dead, please take a second to leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast, or subscribe if for some reason you haven't officially done that. It really helps us get the show in front of more people.
Congratulations again to our winners, and thank you again for listening to the show. Make sure you check your email if you guessed Dongs, but we'll be back again soon. And until then, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.